Okay, welcome to episode 9 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. My name is Tony Esmond. I'm the writer of the Hall Chronicles, Cockney Kung Fu and Atomic Hercules. Today's guest is one of the hosts of the long-running comics podcast, That Comic Smell, as well as being a regular contributor to the Lakes Comics Art podcast. He is also one of the editors with me over at Fair Spark Books. Yes, it's Mr. Tom Stewart. Hello, Tom.
Hello, you mate. How you doing? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Off to Dundee United later, are we? Is that, yeah. Okay,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on, me bally. Yeah.
You can. So the aim is to give an overview of a comic or a series in the hope that people will find our conversation interesting, brackets, or at least not very too, not too annoying, and head off and buy the series, and in doing so keep themselves occupied during these trying times. I asked Tom what he would like to talk about. He jumped straight away into a book name. He had a book name. Did you want to tell us what you were going to be talking about today, Tom?
Yes, it is a comic / graphic novel, whatever you want to call it, that I always recommend to everyone, and it is My Friend Dahmer by Derf Backderf.
Derf Backderf. Is that his proper name? Do you know?
I think I looked this up. No.
I don't think I wrote
it. It is online somewhere, but I don't know what it is. I want to say it's like Jeff or something like that.
We'll call him Durf for the rest of the thing. So I was pleased at this because it's the first one. So this is the 9th episode we've done. It's I had an attempt at another one, but I got a power cut and didn't go through with it. But the this is the first one where I haven't actually previously read the book that was suggested to me. So I was sort of aware of Durf's work previous to this and an admirer from afar of his style. You know, I like that sort of, let's call it sort of fantagraphics-y kind of style, isn't it? You know?
Underground-y,
indie-American style. And I have to say, I went into it and I absolutely loved it. It's sometimes I'll say to people, I read a comic in one sitting, and that's an example of how much I enjoyed it. But I actually split this up, one, because it's quite a long book, but two, because I was enjoying it so much. You know, I really did enjoy it. It's a very strange one. We'll talk about your first experiences of it at the moment. Just to sum up what it's about, because it's not probably what people expect it to be by looking on the cover.
No.
They might think it's something more grisly than it is, but it's not. It's actually sort of a coming of age story. I won't go too deep in it because I know we're going to discuss all this, but a coming of age story of high school kids, a little group of friends, and they have a weird friend, and that is Jeffrey Dahmer. So those who don't know Jeffrey is, he lived between 1960 and 1994, so his sort of teenage years were mid-70s. He also refers to as the Milwaukee Cannibal. He murdered, had sex with, dismembered, and possibly ate 17 men in his life. In 1994, he was beaten to death by a fellow inmate called Christopher Scarver at the Columbia Correctional Institute. His first murder was of a man called Stephen Hicks when he was just 18 years old. He was also briefly in the army, which I was surprised to find this out. I'm not sure if this is mentioned in the book. He was briefly in the army, and he was there was two soldiers who claimed that he'd raped them, drugged and raped them as well in the army. So,
oh, that isn't in the book. No, you're right.
I hate to say I read it on Wikipedia, but I did. So the veracity of that is in question because it's a Wikipedia fact, but you know, it's a possible.
You know, do you know what? I wonder if it might be in the back matter of the book, because this actually has quite a lot of reference points in it.
It does. That I didn't read them all.
I'm still yet to go through them all. I mainly read the sort of profile pieces at the back, but that was about it. I wonder if that is detailed in there, actually.
Yeah, I'll have to have a look.
But he does actually leave out certain sections, but with leaving them out, it sort of lends itself better to the storytelling aspect, the actual narrative.
Yeah, it does. It's an interesting style of narrative. We'll get into that. Where was your first exposure to this book, Tom? So where did you first come across it?
Do you know what? It was kind of on the peripheral, like, since it came out. I'd seen the image of the front cover sort of kicking about. I must have seen it online.
It was about for a while, because I was never in bookshops and stuff, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all, you can always find one in Watersons.
Yeah.
You can always find one in Watersons. But it must have been kicking about. Somebody must have been speaking about it somewhere, because for the longest time I had seen that cover but not actually put the name Derf to it at all. It wasn't until David actually introduced me to Derf's other piece, Trashed.
Oh, because he was a bin man for a while, wasn't he, Derf? Is that where it came from?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, garbage man, they call it in America.
Basically. Although I think he does actually say, I think he says somewhere in here that he was, I don't think he says garbage truck. I think he's on a bin truck or something like
Oh,
that.
okay. All right.
In his description, I can't remember. But yeah, it was as soon as that was sort of put forward, when looking up just DERF as a creator, this obviously is one of the first things that comes up, because it's actually, it's Angoulême Revelation Award 2014.
Yeah, it's an award winner, yeah. I know he toured, he speaks quite openly about touring the world on the back of this book, doesn't he? Because he got invited all over the
It did
place.
really well. Yeah, it did really well. I mean, it's got a movie after it and everything as well.
Which I did watch. I know we don't really talk about movies, but it might be worth touching on later. But I did watch that yesterday. Yeah, have you seen it?
I've only seen the start of it. It
Right,
sounds
okay.
ridiculous, but I actually started watching it just before midnight, the day before it was taken off of the Channel 4 on demand.
Oh
So
no.
halfway through,
Okay.
it cut off and it never came back on.
Oh dear.
So I only got the start of
Right,
it.
okay. So anyway, so did you read it as a physical copy? Did you get bought it or did you download it or?
I actually read it as a physical copy.
By yourself or?
Did I buy it myself, actually? I think I might have got it as a. Oh no, I did buy it myself. Yeah, I bought it myself in Edinburgh, actually. We had a voucher for Watchtons, of all things, and I actually got it there with a couple other things. And yeah, it was. Do you know what? I hadn't even. I just heard about Trash through Dave. Hadn't even read that, and just kind of from seeing the front cover and recognizing it and putting that association, I went, no, I'm going to crack on with this first. And I'd heard of Jeffrey Dahmer. I'd watched a film called the Dahmer Files that was almost like part dramatization, part documentary, like kind of interviews with like his neighbors and stuff around about the time he got caught. And yeah, it was kind of weird. It's very much in the same vein as as My Friend Dahmer, actually. They never played a lot on the aspects of the murders. It plays a lot on the story of the person, kind of thing.
I mean
So
that's
having
the
that,
interesting
having what.
as sorry to interrupt, but that's the that is what you say there is the interesting aspect to this book is it's not apart from some animal murders or killings, it's not actually particularly gruesome, you know.
No, it's not. And that's why I always recommend it as well, because people sort of look at it and you have to quickly sort of say, especially if you're familiar with Jeffrey Dahmer, you straight away go, oh, the serial killer, and you go, no,
Yeah,
there's it's
exactly.
not gruesome.
Yeah,
it's
it
it's
needs an
a it's a
explanation.
well told yeah it's a well told story, part kind of biography, part autobiography as well, because it's partly about Derf and his life growing up around him,
Yeah, it's part sort of Fast Times at Ridgemont High or something like that. It's that sort of college drama of the 70s, and everyone's got that sort of spotty faced t-shirt wearing, bike riding 70s nostalgia to it as well. It really has.
It's the haircuts that really get it with me. Everybody's got that kind of just coming out of the 60s, still quite long, sort of maybe cropped hair for the guys anyway. None of them have really got crew cuts or anything. They're all quite long hair, and it's the,
You can tell it's sort of
the little.
lankly greasy as well. There's a sort of
Yeah,
definitely.
he's. Do you know what? He's the perfect artist slash illustrator for this piece as well, because his sort of, I don't know, almost kind of Robert Crumb-esque style, but a wee bit more cartoony. But no, that doesn't do it down.
I know
But
what you mean.
a wee bit more sort of, yeah. A
There's
wee.
some.
It's still overly detailed,
It's
but
still
it's.
panels. It's still very recognisable as a comic. And I was pleased actually because I'd seen some of the images of some of his sort of sketchier work, which I think you see at the end of the book, some of his sort of slightly earlier stuff. And it's more, you can see he's taken it into Photoshop and cleaned it up a bit and stuff like that. It's a cleaner line than I expected it to be, which I liked actually for the style.
Well, it was he'd originally done it, I think, I want to say about 10 years prior, as a shorter piece. And it was a wee bit more scratchy, and then he kind of refined it and made it a bit longer and really fleshed it out. He only really had the idea around the time that Dahmer actually got caught in the 90s, and he sort of fleshed out a little short story at that point, and did a short comic at that point that went along with it. But you can see it's really, compared to this, it's very sort of rudimentary compared to this. This is really fleshed out and really nice piece. And I mean, he's even got like,
It's not slick, but it is. There's something about it. There's
yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's hard to put into words. I will come up with it as we go along. But yeah, definitely. Sorry, I interrupted you. What were you going to
Yes.
say, mate?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, he's really, I think his confidence in his work really comes out in this. There's no, I don't think there's a single part of this entire book that comes across as hesitant in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I
He
agree.
knows the story that he wants to tell. He's researched it well, and he's going to show you every aspect as much as he can and not skimp on any detail at all.
Yeah, I watched some interviews with him on the run up to tonight, on YouTube, and in a couple of them, I think it's because he's very popular in France. There's a lot of French interviews, where he's sort of being translated, and I think there's a French series where they get the people who've been to Angoulême to draw different subjects, and I think the readers or the viewers throw suggestions in, and he's very assured. He's straight on with like an ink line almost for some of them. He draws Joey Ramone, and he's just one of those guys you can just lay it down straight away without having to fanny around for 4 hours. He just like lays the ink straight down. I mean, it's not anatomic, it's barely anatomically correct. It's very cartoony, isn't it, for anyone that sort of sees it. But there's a consistent style to it. It's just like really beautiful. I really enjoy the strong inks and stuff like that in it. I really do. There's a couple of scenes right at the start where he uses a lot of black outline on it, and yeah, absolutely gorgeous. Should we talk a little bit about him? So, go on, mate. Sorry, sorry. What were you gonna
No, I was just going to say, when you said that it's not anatomically correct, you're very right, because everybody is very sort of lanky and everything,
Yeah.
but he does focus a lot on like muscle structure. I mean, you can really see like thighs and knobbly knees, and you can almost make out the skeleton of the person underneath because
Yeah.
everybody's skin is like so tight.
Yeah, it
It's
all
really
makes
good.
sense, doesn't it? It really does. And he draws some
Yeah, it does.
great hands, and his full face on faces are goggle-eyedly disturbing. They're sweaty, and they're exactly right for the time. They just he draws some great sort of glasses on Dharma, which I just love,
On Dharma,
that
yeah.
distinctive glasses he wears. Yeah, really good. So
Well, that's something we'll definitely get to.
yeah, well, yeah. Durf Bak Durf, he was started as a political cartoonist, and he was a big fan of Don Martin from Mad Magazine, and you can really see that actually. I'm a huge fan of Don Martin. He's one of my favourite. He doesn't get enough credit in Mad Magazine. I really enjoy his stuff. I find his style, the sort of stretched out weirdness of his characters, very interesting. But he started as a political cartoonist, which he described as being god awful as a job on an interview recently I watched with him. He got sacked from this from a comic strip job for being his boss wrote in the, I think the letter saying general distastefulness, which you got to admire, which I want written on my headstone, I think, never mind on a letter from a boss. But he changed his style to do a post-punk story called The City, which was about Cleveland, which I think is still where he lives. And he changed again to do this sort of style, which he describes. I got to love a guy who he can't, because he's kind of sort of laconically grumpy, isn't he, in his interviews. He's got the sort of he's always sort of looking to the side, and you can see he's not sort of huffing at the questions. He actually does throw himself into interviews, but I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of him sometimes. I think he's got the sort of a slight grump to him, which I always like in a creator,
Yeah, he's just very straight to the point
yes,
a lot of the
that's
time as
exactly right.
well.
Yeah, he is.
He can lament about what he's talking about, but he does get to the crux of it pretty quickly.
Yeah. There's a couple of phrases he used, which I thought, right, I'm on board, totally on board with this geezer. He rather than saying graphic novels, he says big ass comic books, which I kind of like. I think that's a thing we should all think about it that way, rather than the Ponzi, Waterstones graphic novel phrase. But and he was talking about modern cartooning, and he says, "Back off the airbrush, will you?" And I thought, yeah, I like this guy, He's really in love with the physical act of drawing, and he still draws. I think he still pencils and inks and then scans in and cleans up. So he's still like that. Like you say, he's won an award at Angoulême. Yeah, this is one of maybe four or five big books by him, maybe three or four even, But this is by far his most popular.
Yeah.
He draws like web strips, he draws these, he does quite a lot of different stuff. So I watched some interviews. If you can, there's not that many on there, and you have to be careful because most of them these days focus in on the movie. But
Yes,
there's
so
a
the
few on there. If you look for the French ones, generally it's him speaking in English, so you can sort of get away with it, as he was. So this book is with extra. It's got quite a lot of back matter, like you say, extra pages in the back. 270 pages, black and white all the way through. I got mine on Comixology, but I have since ordered the physical book because I thought, well, it's so good. I want to read it. Do you want to? Should we dive in a little bit into the book? Just some moments. We can maybe swap moments and go through. Is that okay? Yeah.
go for it. Yeah, totally.
Can I just? I'll start then by saying the opening. I absolutely love the opening. This silent opening of him sort of walking down a street and what is it, through the forest? I can't remember. Or through the woods. And
No,
it's just,
he's at the side of the road,
that's
yeah.
right, yeah. And it's it opens on this just peculiar sort of hilly road, motor, no, you know, what we'd probably call a B road or something, and him walking down the paths, and it gives, it's got like a whole page shot with him on one side walking down a pavement off into the distance, you know, and just this sort of immediately it emotes the loneliness of and the weirdness all at once of Dharma. It's re really interesting. And then he focuses on, it focuses in on his period specific shoes. He's got like All Stars on, hasn't he? Yeah. And
He's got old school cons on, yeah, definitely.
And just crunch, 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 four panels a page, crunch, and then he sort of walks into a dead cat with a, it's got that sort of comedy tongue out, flies all over it. And he almost stands on it. It gives it a kick. And then you think, right, what's going on here? This is just strange. This is just flipping weird. And that panel of just the dead cat, I think I put on Twitter just saying I'm reading this tonight. And
Just the one of him standing over it, yeah.
And then he picks it up and he's, there's a real shadow in his face. And it's only sort of his over, it's sort of overdone lips on him. He's got this almost like a full pout on, like a woman's pout, glasses, and the tip of his nose lit up. And he's holding this, you're looking up at him from a sort of worm's eye view, and he's holding this dead cat in his hands. And he sort of stares at it silently and walks off with it.
Look
And
at the detail in that one splash though of him holding onto that cat though
the
is
trousers are
just
great, aren't they?
unbelievable. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, they're like two columns, aren't they? He's almost a giant, I think, almost from what you say there, looking down with just a clear sky, which works so well. And a slightly wavy line of a border. You know, it's not, nothing's too exacted in this, you know?
No, you're right.
Just this just screams of this sort of the underground comics I like to read, you know, it's that sort of coherent but edgy underground. You know, there's a strangeness to it, that a weirdness that is inherent in every brushstroke. There's a almost like you feel, you're beginning to feel dirty as you watch him do this. You're beginning to sort of get sucked into this sort of weirdness. That's probably my standout. And then he heads off into the woods. And I think it worked out. It's like 8 pages before you get anyone speaking, and it's not him.
Yeah, it's somebody else. It's somebody that comes towards him in the woods. And even then, it's off panel. They're talking to each other. They don't even know he's there yet. That's when the words come up. They're just speaking about where they can go, and then they sort of see him and give it, oh, you know, crap, I knew we shouldn't have went through here, when they see Dahmer. Because everybody, that's the thing, the feeling from the minute go when anybody sees him is that he's strange. You know, they don't say anything about him being like creepy or anything. They're just like, oh, he's just weird. You know what I mean?
I mean,
And that
that's
was that
evident at the
seemed
end, isn't it? When someone phones him and says, you'll never guess who's a serial killer, and he guesses Dharma second.
They're having a conversation before it as well. Evidently we're skipping to the end, but still.
That's fine.
They're having that conversation where they've met up like 10 years later, him and his friends in a cafe back home, and they're sort of saying, oh, where do you think this guy is, where do you think this guy is, and they come to Dahmer and mention the fact that he's in the army, and they're like, oh, I didn't see that coming, oh, I bet he's a serial killer.
That's
And
right, I
it just
forgot
kind
that
of goes
line.
from there. Yeah. And it's, I know it's a flippant line to throw away, but I think we've had, like, I've definitely had conversations like that where you've gone about people from school and you're like, oh, I bet you they're a fucking serial killer or something like
Yes.
that, as a joke,
Yeah.
not expecting it to
I've
fucking
said it
be
about a
true,
number
you know
of
what I mean?
guests.
Yeah. Cliff, is that
Yeah, it's Cliff, isn't it?
it?
But the thing is, this is what, so just a quick summary of what happens. He meets these kids who, I know, I'm going to say they're not DERF, are they? Is it other kids?
No, it's other kids. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's just some kids from the neighborhoods in general.
Yeah.
I think it seems to be quite a small area. So it's
Yeah.
maybe like six kids out of the eight that maybe stay in there, but you know.
Yeah, it's all the little
But
random things,
they.
you know, all the same kids on the bikes, and you know, it's that sort of thing. That look like little town outside of, is it Milwaukee, I think, or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Akron or something like that, I
Akron, is it?
think,
Oh,
if I
okay.
remember rightly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is
Am
about
I right
Dharma,
in saying that?
I can't remember, we can find out. Yeah, but the thing I always think about Dharma is that there was always that kid at your school, wasn't there? There was always a kid who was slightly weird. And
Yes.
we get that later off him because you can't, because I suppose he's a mess. I mean, he's emotionally and mentally he's a mess, and they make that clear in the book. But he doesn't know whether he wants friends or not. But he adopts this style of doing a person with learning difficulties an impression of them in order
Yeah.
to ingratiate himself into these this group of. And they're not the jocks. They're not the A guys. They're not the alpha males in the school, are they? Just a bunch of genuine feeling friends, and he ingratiates himself with them.
Yeah, they're just the kind of in between crowd. They're not
They
jocks, they're
are.
not band geeks, they're just into their own thing.
Yeah.
They kind of blend in as much as he does
Yeah, I think you're right.
at the time.
But there was I was thinking about this as I was reading it, and I mean, I went to an all boys school, so there was more options for weirdness in my school. But I remember we had one kid, and he got away with doing this sort of weird impression where he'd sing a song and dance at the same time, and it was like a comedy. I don't know. It's like whenever the sort of bullies came near him, he would do this sort of song, and like a comedy with a high-pitched comedy voice on it, and it seemed to get him out of the shit. And the kids kind of liked him because he was this sort of weird character. And I remember his other thing was he used to, every time the charts were on the radio, he'd sit there and write down, record them all, record all the charts on a, whatever it was, Tuesday morning, I read it came out. And
Right.
he would give us all copies. So if you wanted a copy, you gave him a tape and he'd copy it for you. And that was kind of, and he was the same. He was a sort of skinny, starey, big-nosed, lank-haired outsider, but he kind
Yeah.
of survived, you know, Catholic boarding school by being this kid who would do you a tape, you know, and if you forced it, you know, if he was forced to, he'd do like a silly joke, you know, like with a silly voice.
Yeah, it's just like having a little bit of eccentricity just to kind of coast by in a
Yeah,
way, just
to survive
something to kind of
almost.
gloss over. Yeah.
But the difference with
Yeah.
Dharma is he was outside of that, he was so weird, and it's hard to. I actually find it quite hard to make my mind up as to whether DERF's trying to make. I mean, DERF's obviously just telling a true story, but whether we're feeling him as a tragic character or as, you know, the origins, you know, the genesis of one of the most awful people in the world. You know, it's a weird one, isn't it? It's to make a judgment call
Yeah,
on.
it's funny. It gets a lot of that. A lot of people sort of say, is he trying to humanize a monster? But I think
Yeah.
from the fact of the opening page of him picking up this cat, and so it's got a weird kind of slit on its side where it's obviously been damaged, where it's been run over or whatever,
Yeah.
and he's just sitting sort of squeezing at it. I think, and that sort of weird curiosity from it. I think from that opening, he is showing you that. Look, what's about to come is going to show you the makings of a monster, but I think this was already implemented from day one. This was
Yeah.
already going to come, regardless of what was going to happen. He was already that weird guy who wanted to see the insides of bodies, but it was just at that time, and because of the time period as well, it just wasn't taken as being as alarming. It was just more
Yeah.
weird
We didn't know the
than it was
cliches of
scary.
it, perhaps, back then, did we? We just sort of saw people as being a bit weird. You know,
Yeah,
our
it's because
brains as
people like
kids as
him had
well.
had to come.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we didn't make it right in our heads. You know what I mean? It's just sort of now everyone's a media-driven cliche, aren't they? You're a serial killer, or you're a child sex offender, or you're a
Yeah.
a date rapist, or there's that shortcut of visual imagery, which he encapsulates as a serial killer, doesn't he? As a kid, as
Yeah,
everyone,
yeah.
we'd all look at him now and we see him coming out of the schoolyard. I was picking my son up from school and I'd see him and go, "Oh, who's that weirdo son?" A bit like that. You know what I mean? But
Yeah.
it's strange. Yes, and I don't blame them. I think Durf, in a few interviews I've listened to about him, has said he's quite quick to say that he didn't. He can't be blamed for it. I think someone put a question to him, and it was a rather strange one, where they said, it was almost like saying you should have realised. And he's quick to say, well, no, he was just this weird kid. Although they did, there are little moments in it where they begin to realise, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they do, and that's he points that out at one point. He says everybody had their moment where they went off of them and where
Yeah.
they started to realize that this was a problemed kid and there was something not quite right. And that's there is a specific moment for him later in the book where that happens, and he starts to lose all the humor, even behind the impression and everything. It's like, oh, everybody was having a great time, but I was just looking at him thinking this is wrong,
Yeah.
you know.
And
And
it's done very
yeah.
well, that moment. We're talking maybe a bit about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
what the there's two elements to this. So there's a an interior decorator, kind of designer guy, who's played by Pee Wee Herman in the movie, I think, plays him. Who
Oh,
is
is it?
yeah, I think it is, yeah. Who's got I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't technically, I don't know what the medical term is, but he's certainly suffered something like spina bifida, or he's
I think it's meant to be like cerebral palsy or something like
oh
that.
right, yeah, I think you're right, yeah. And he
Yeah.
speaks in a weird way, and he occasionally has a sort of a minor fit, and Durf decides to imitate this, and you see little flickers of it in his eyes where he's kind of entranced by the vulnerability and the mortality almost of this person. So he begins to do an impression of him at school, and it catches on. It catches on as like this funny little term
Yeah.
where even everyone else in this little group of friends will walk past each other and do a little impression of it. Now he
Called
becomes,
Dahmerisms.
that's it, yeah, and and they just get him to do it. I mean, it's kind of like the kid at my school. They say, "I'll do your dance again. That's fucking hilarious." You know what I mean? It's like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he does it, and he does it, and he does it, and he does it to great effect. And he almost becomes something of a hero for these kids. But at one point in the comic, you realise that his mother suffers from it. Is that not right?
Yeah, his mum suffers from crippling fits anyway of
That's
some
right.
sort that leave
Yeah.
her kind of exhausted. But the way Derf depicts her having her fits, it looks and is shaped in the exact same ways in which Dahmer is doing the impression in the school.
Yeah.
We've already seen multiple occasions of him doing that impression in school, and then we sort of get the flicker of what's her name? Is it Joyce? Joyce Dahmer, am I right in
I can't
saying?
remember actually. Yeah.
Joyce, yeah, Joyce
Right.
Dahmer. We get the flash of her actually having the fit and breaking out into this sort of cold sweat. And yeah, you see it. You see the full thing, and it's like they say, that's they kind of realised after a while that he wasn't doing the decorator. He wasn't sort of taking the mick. This was sort of his coping mechanism in a way
Yeah.
for seeing his mum going through this, you know.
That's interesting for you to say coping. That's I came at it slightly differently than that, but yeah, that's
Right.
interesting. I found it down that's I don't know, you've got me thinking about it now, whether it is a coping mode. You might be right actually. I think yeah, it might be, but I thought it was extremely cruel. I thought it took a turn that point. We began to see the cruel streak in him that I thought they were trying to say the sociopathic, unconnected to people. This whole thing about sociopaths,
Yeah.
they don't sort of empathically feel the emotions of others and communicate it to them. If someone's sad, if I was sad, you might be sad. Do you know what I mean? But for
Yeah,
them,
yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
sort of have that wall up. But to cope with her, maybe that's right. Maybe that's the only way he felt embarrassed by it, maybe. So he turned it into this joke. Yeah, could be, couldn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was just kind of every time Derf chooses to show Dahmer at home, he's feeling the weight of all his of any kind of emotion that he does have. He's feeling the
Yeah.
crippling weight of it then. So I kind of feel like him sort of seeing his mum going through that in the home is maybe leaving him a wee bit vulnerable and leaving him a wee bit
Yeah.
open more to emotion, and that might then induce him to do it at school to kind of get it off his chest as to what's been going on. He's kind of almost aggravated in a way
Yeah.
and saying he's kind of doing that impression to be like, oh, my fucking mum keeps doing this, so
Yeah.
I'm going to do this, and I can't even do anything about it. But I do get what you mean as well. There is that disconnect, even in the way he draws him when he's watching her. He's just walking away from her.
Yeah.
You know, he's
Yeah.
not helping her out. He's just leaving her to have a fit. You know, he doesn't bother. He just looks back with that cold stare and keeps walking into his room.
Because on the face of it, he has a sort of traditional American small town life, doesn't he? He's got a mum and dad and a brother. But the
Yes.
truth of it was that his mum and dad rowed completely. His mother was had been in hospital for treatment and stuff, and his dad left at one point, never to return, and I think lived in a motel for
Yeah.
a while. And
But
his
we never see his dad in the book at all.
right, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because she takes the brother away, doesn't she? Is that right? I don't remember now.
Yeah, she
Yeah.
does. I'm trying to think of it. There's a scene around the table, but I was trying to think if it actually involved all of them or not. Oh no, sorry. We do see his dad for like a brief second. It's
Right.
two panels. And it
Right. Yeah,
is
I remember that table.
you
Yeah.
see the family, yeah,
Yeah.
and then that's it. You never see him again.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Because I
And
know that
he makes a
Derf.
point of saying that.
Yeah. Okay. Because I know Derf, people might say, well, how could he could possibly know that because he was just a school friend of his. And early on in the book, they weren't actually proper friends at that point. But the thing is, he did a lot of research into this book. I mean, he read all the FBI files, he read the interviews, or listened to the interviews at the
Yep.
very least. And he actually went and interviewed people, witnesses, I heard him say. So this is not just based on, because we get an intimate portrait of Dahmer away from his three friends. You know, it's not completely about that. In fact, I would say probably 60%, 70% of the book is Dahmer on his own, you know, with a little bit of narration sometimes from his friends. But so he did actually research that. So that a lot of that may well come from elsewhere. It's not, you know, a complete autobiography of Derf. But
No.
yeah, it's interesting. So it's a sort of fact-driven book, I would say, in a way.
Yeah, it is.
There's a couple of little bits that I found. I didn't know much about Dahmer. I'd heard about him. It wasn't someone I'd sort of read a book on or anything. But they go quite into him being an alcoholic at high school as a way of coping with these sort of very dark thoughts. Tortured every waking hour by ghastly sexual fantasies, I think is how Derf puts it in the book. And that's
Yeah.
dealt with really interestingly. I have to say the way he copes with it, and he isn't caught because he's so weird. He just walks about with a cup, and in the cup is whiskey or
Yeah.
something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very
Yeah,
strange.
he starts stashing the alcohol in the later pages. He starts stashing the alcohol all over different places in school so that if he has to go to a class at any point, he can just excuse himself, go outside and down a whole bottle of vodka or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
And
that's drinking. Yeah, yeah.
yeah, he's proper, as somebody says to him at one point, he sort of bumps into them whilst in study hall or whatever the equivalent is that he says, and he sort of stumbles into them as he's going up the stairs, and he breathes in their face, and the person says to him, "Oh God, get away, booze hound!"
That's right.
And it's because he constantly has that smell of booze on his breath. Like they walk past him in the hall at one point, and he does that impression, and they go,
And they
"God,
get it.
can you smell him from over here?" Yeah, and yeah, he was just basically trying to numb out the thoughts that he was having of
It's
sleeping with dead people.
yeah, it was. And there's a jogger who jogs past his house who becomes obsessed with. And he
Yes.
watches him, and he at one point he takes a bat out in order to batter him, pull him in the bushes and kill him, or have sex with him and kill him, I'm guessing. But the it doesn't happen. And there's one bit I automatically thought of you. We're both dog lovers, and
Yeah.
you know the scene I'm talking about. He takes a dog into the woods. He finds his dog, puts a bit of rope around its neck, and drags it into the woods. And he pulls a knife out. And I was so thinking, please don't kill the dog. I won't watch Marley and Me. Do you know what I mean? I can't watch any. I won't watch John Wick because a dog dies in it. And I'm reading this saying Tom cannot have recommended this book to me. That's my last little string of hope was the fact that you wouldn't have recommended it to me if there was a dog killed in it. And he doesn't kill him.
No.
And it's a great looking dog. It's the best cartoon dog ever. I love the look of that dog.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is. He has a great panel as well where it shows his full face with a little leaf coming down. And he's went into great detail to grip how innocent looking this creature is, you know, for even Dahmer to kind of give him a bit of mercy. He needs to make him look as innocent and as sweet as possible, you know.
And of course, the other side of that is you spend a lot of this book hoping that Dahmer will get some friends, hoping that he'll be redeemed, or at least have the pain pulled away from him for a year in high school. And that dog was part of that for me. He's discovered this dog, and he's sort of this happy looking dog. He sort of follows him into his killing rock in the woods. Mm-hmm. But of course, then Durf, being like an extremely clever storyteller, tips it on his head by the time, because we then go back to the rock and it's covered in dog's skulls.
Yep.
And you think,
Straight away.
He did do it. You're like, oh. And it's so clever. It's so well done.
Yeah.
From a genuine, from that moment, I thought that I'm so invested in this book. It's so human and so well constructed.
That's the end of part two, and the line that he kind of leaves it on as well. You know, it was the first time Jeff considered butchering not just roadkill or small animals, but a creature large enough to feel fear and pain. Also the last time he would show mercy, and it, like, the word mercy is on its own under all the skulls, which is just it's terrifying.
It is,
but it's not, but it's not brutal. You know, it's not in your face, brutal images. It's just giving you that glimpse of, you know, this boy has a fucking mean streak. You know, this is just not good.
Yeah,
this is terrifying.
So it's also clever in the way that it would be easier to tell a story where he gets worse and worse and worse and worse, becomes an alcoholic, leaves school, murders people. Do you know what I mean? But there's a line in it that I was really impressed with, Durf, and it was, Dahmer's descent was not a straight line down. And I thought, that is the best line. Because he redeems himself a couple of times. There's a moment they go on a college trip to Washington, and he stops drinking. He actually just stops drinking, I think, because he's so sociopathic, he can just stop drinking, so he does. And they're him and some friends and the little gang, they're wandering around in Washington. And one of them said, wouldn't it be great to meet the president? I think it was Carter, off the top of my head. He said, well, we couldn't get in to see Carter. And he says, well, what about Mondale? And he blags, it's down to him, that he blags his way into the White House to see Mondale, who was, I think at the time, was the vice president.
He's
got that sort of single-minded, just, he's going to do this, so he does it. And it's almost, but he's quite charming. You'd have to be quite charming. Sorry, man.
Derf actually says that earlier on in the book as well, because I think something happens and he's almost about to kind of get into trouble, and he talks his way out of it, and he says, you know, this was, oh no, actually it's there. It's when he goes to see Mondale, actually.
Right.
He says, Jeff had an incredible talent for bullshit.
Yeah.
A skill he had honed to perfection, maintaining the lie that was his life. I mean, fuck me.
Yeah, great line.
It's just little lines just accompanied with just little glimmers of this terrifying individual, but, you know, just to show to the extent of what he could do and why he could maybe end up getting away with what he got away with for so long, you know. Yeah.
And we'll pause there to find out what he's going to get away with while we've got time for an advert from one of our sponsors.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
excuse me for a minute. Tired of FaceTime, Zoom, Teams or Skype? I know I am. Why not hang about in a local motorway services lorry car park? You can meet new friends whilst having a smelly, overweight trucker penetrate you in his cab. What a time to be alive. Why not become a prozzy? Yeah, sorry about that, mate. There you go.
That's all right.
Yeah, back to the book. So we've got, so leading on from that is So he's in free fall to a certain extent after that moment. So he's sort of drinking very heavily. He's bumping into people in the school corridor, you know, the classic school with the lockers and that sort of thing. And the kids decide that they can make some money. One last time, he's going to do his attack, his impression, and they actually think they can get some money for it. And they get some money, which he gets the money, and they decide to do it in the local mall. And they all go down there, and he does it, but he does it like it's an hour long. He does it non-stop. He does it
Yeah, he
everywhere to
does.
everyone. And because he doesn't, because he's lost any connection to normal people's way, not even ways of acting, but just that relationship we have between each other, where we understand where we're overstepping a line and where we're not, and whether we should do, and whether it's funny or not. You know, he just does it, and it almost stuns them into silence, doesn't it? It's almost.
Yeah, it's that's the bit when Derf loses it with him, and that's when they're taking him to the mall to do this shtick. He, before going to do it, he batters down six tins of beer, but one after another relentlessly. You know,
Yeah, he
he's like, it's
describes
only
that
like a
in
twenty.
detail, doesn't he?
Yeah. There was only like a 20-minute car journey or something, and he smashes these six tins back. But he says that was his moment, that he fell off and just couldn't, he just couldn't get back on board with them at all. He just didn't understand. Oh, sorry, 10-minute drive, and he smashed an entire six pack. But yeah, that was the moment that he fell off with Dahmer. And then he says it himself. He's like watching him do all this stuff, and everybody else is laughing. He's just thinking, oh, this isn't right. There's something not connecting here at all.
And
Yeah, just
that's often the case, though. It's often we find that, don't we, where we thought we knew a friend, and then they get on the whiskey or something, and you suddenly immediately realize that they're not the sort of person you want to hang about with, you know.
yeah.
It was and it, this was the time that it used to happen, because we had all had childhood friends, and people change in puberty and, you know, the late teens and stuff like that. And he'd done it to the extreme. He'd done it to, you know, to 11. But there's a moment where he's drinking in the back of the car, and you know that that's their friendship done, almost. You know, you feel it, don't you? And then the coup de grace is the dance, the attack that he imitates of his mother, and what's the phrase he uses? Interior decorator or something like that, is it?
Yeah, he keeps saying the interior decorator.
That's it.
That's the way it's written. It's with
Yeah,
the
it is.
R's taken out. Yeah.
And he does that, and you think he's done. That's now the slippery slope almost. You feel
Yeah.
that's the end of the story for him. I mean, it does go on from there. It's so interesting. It's such a I'm trying to sort of purposely think of a character study in comics that is so insightful in so much detail. You know, it's rare that you'll see anything like that, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, and it completely helps that Derf was so close to the kind of subject matter, to be honest. I mean, there's a lot of people who have done extensive research into things and not got half the insight that he's got in this. And he wasn't even really, when you put it all together, he wasn't even really that close in all actuality. But he still has that extra edge of having been there and having seen all that stuff. And having all the aspects that surrounded it as well, that makes up to the entirety of the sort of the person, the monster, as they say. But getting all the sort of surrounding details as well, all the other people he was surrounded by, even at school, home, the jogger, like everything, getting all those little aspects really fleshes out the whole character of Dahmer. You know, it's not just a whole thing of, you know, like those rubbish music sort of dramatizations of people's lives, the musicians' lives or whatever, and it's always just so focused on that person, and it doesn't really ever get the other surrounding characters,
Yeah,
so
it's
you
a
don't get that
360.
real.
You can look around this guy, and you know who's around him and what, you know, where he's going and stuff like that. It's a weird one, but it reflects. I found that this is when you're growing up, and when you've got friends for a long time over a period of, you know, decades, you know them, and then you think you don't know them because they do something, and then you know them again, and then you think you don't know them, and then you know them. But that's part of the reality of personality, because we can't live in each other's skulls all the time, and and that's how it is. That's the nearest you'll get. Your best friend sometimes you might think, I didn't expect that. You know, there's that sort of thing going on. And you
Yeah.
get that off Dharma, and there's a couple of moments in this where you think, well, I didn't fucking see that coming. You know,
Yeah. Yeah.
there's did anything strike you like that yourself, or?
Do you know, it's more the sort of human aspects of him
Right.
when he shows us a bit of humanity, like when he takes that date to the prom
That is
and
exactly
stuff
where I
like
was
that.
going with that, man. Yeah, exactly. So
Yeah,
strange.
those aspects were just weird. And he even said, like, Derf even says himself, he's like, he didn't go to prom, but fucking Jeffrey Dahmer did.
That's right. They went to the
He's
cinema or
like,
something, didn't they? Something like that. Can't remember
yeah,
that. Yeah.
they went. He's got just a little line that's brilliant in it. He went to the Cineplex, and it's like them sitting watching it, watching the film, sort of saying this film really stinks, and then just the single panel of his face saying, "I'm such a loser," you know, and it's him saying he's a loser when he's writing a story about serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer
I
having gone
know.
to the prom and taken somebody like 4 years his younger or something like that, and then pissing off to a McDonald's and not actually going to the prom,
Yeah.
really, you know.
So the story around
And
that is he decides to go to the prom, Dharma, clearly, and
yeah.
you're not really sure what's going on, but he turns up with a girl who's quite a few years younger than him, and in the comic, significantly shorter, and looks like she's,
Yeah.
just, a lot younger. And he takes her to the prom, and I think he kind of, and he almost had to like bribe her because her friend was going or something, so he got her to go so she can meet her friend at the prom. And then he thinks, nah, he sort of has this sort of very cold, blank expression through the middle of it, and he clearly thinks, fuck it, and just goes to McDonald's for tea. And
Yeah.
yeah, it's just strange. It's just, but I love the moments like that because they suddenly remind you of things. You suddenly are, oh, yeah, this is what's going on. And you kind of think, well, she was lucky not to get murdered. So I
Yeah,
almost felt a little
exactly.
bit of that
Yeah.
about it. Yeah, but
But
he pulls a
that's
chair out for her
really
and sits her down.
surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he pulls a chair out. But the really surprising bit about it, the bit that really shocked me after all that, okay, fair enough, he goes to the prom and stuff, that took me by surprise. He goes to the McDonald's, but then he goes back to give her a lift home.
And she says, "Where did you go?" And he goes, "I got hungry." And then
Yeah.
he said goodbye to her with a stiff handshake. And it's just,
Yeah.
who on earth lets their daughter go to? I know we didn't know the serial killer, but he was in the state of him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then there's
Oh, and he must have been stinking of booze as well.
And there's a moment after that where he's only a few pages on from that, where he's sitting on a bed on his own in a full page scan, and he says a full page splash. And he says it's the kind of friendship that Dharma never experienced and never would. And Dharma said, I think on interview, and I think this is quoted in the book, he said, "I had normal friends at college and at high school, but I didn't have anything after that."
Yeah.
But because Dharma construed this to be a normal friendship, and the boys weren't taking advantage of him, I don't think they tried with him.
I think the fact that Dharma was sort of going past them every day doing the impression and stuff, and they were kind of doing it back to him. It wasn't a case of the one. It wasn't just him doing it and then them pissing themselves laughing and that was it. They basically did what he did and then integrated that within them. And, you know, he just felt part of this, connected to this group. And yeah, you're right. They didn't take advantage of him. But at the same point, they probably didn't make the situation any better as well. But they're just kids. They're just kids at the end of the day. They're doing what they think is right. They're having a laugh and thinking that they're having a laugh with this guy, you
It
know.
was the same as like a group of friends repeating a line out of whatever the funny TV show that they watched as kids,
Yeah.
for a certain generation, it would have been a line out of Wink Wink, Nudge Nudge out of Monty Python, and it would have been Hitchhikers.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, it would have been The Inbetweeners or The Office or something, And it's this sort of, they're not nerds, but they're just nice kids, and it's almost like a shortcut to a bit of private humour that they had, that they'd make this bah noise every time he walked past. And yeah,
Yeah.
it's a strange one, but he perverts that. He perverts that joke. And you can't tell whether he does it on purpose or not. That's the thing. There's a darkness behind his eyes that you can't always tell what he means by stuff. And yeah,
Yeah,
it's so well done.
he's doing what he does through, well, what he will do later in life, and is just sort of manipulating the situation to become his sort of full control.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good point.
He has full control of the situation, even by making an arse of himself. He has full control over that situation, and there's no way that they can say otherwise. If he chose to do something else, then the fun stops. You know, he has full control over them and that whole situation right there. He even made money off of them, you
Yeah,
know.
that's true. Yeah, that's true. Are there any particular sequences that you really like in this? Let's say from an artistic point of view, is there anything that really stuck with you?
Artistically, the thing that really stuck with me, and for a haunting thing, because when I first read it, it genuinely gave me nightmares for about 4 days.
Right, okay.
I kept seeing Dahmer at the end of the bed, because that look that Derf gets with him, with the dark face, with the no eyes, sort of just the tint coming back on the glasses,
Yeah.
sort of looking straight on at his face, is horrifying. It's so dominating and so dark, and just this dark looming creature, given the full size and weight behind this really creepy guy. You know, it genuinely, it's the first time I've actually been properly scared by a
Creeped out by
comic.
something. Yeah, I get that.
Really creeped out by it. Not like I didn't go, you know, waking up being like, oh fuck, but you know, I would see it and sort of be like, oh shit, you know.
Yeah, there's a disturbing element to this comic, and that's accentuated by the undergroundy style to it. I think if this was done by someone's perhaps like Jim Lee or Butch Geese or even Mitch Brightweiser or something like that, it wouldn't have the effect.
No.
Because Durf lives in
No.
the faces of these stories, doesn't he? Durf, even though sometimes they're very simply drawn, there's such a personality to everyone. There's a distinct personality to everyone in this
Yes.
story, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's bits with him and his three other friends in the car, and you can tell each one of them apart. Just a wee sort of distinction in the hair or something. Even though kids at that time probably all looked fairly similar. He still manages to get the distinction between each of them, and just with a simple line, like you say, it's unbelievable. But another thing that really gets me is like the Rolling Hills and the Rolling Road.
Yeah,
He shows that
really.
perspective so well. It's unbelievable. It's
There's
clearly.
a flattened, crushed-in element to it, like a puppet show or something at certain points, isn't there? The stiffness of the bushes and the trees with this, undulating road ahead is just so beautiful. Yeah. I wouldn't want to
But
see it in colour. I wouldn't want it in colour. I think it's perfectly suited to black and white, yeah. Sorry, man, go on.
Yeah, definitely. No, he manages to flesh out the town so well. Without him giving a map, you get a feel for how far everything is from each other. Because when they're going to like the mall, or they're going to school or something, you know, they're driving. So you get an aspect of, okay, so that's about 10 or 20 minutes from the house or whatever. Or, you know, Jeff's on the bus, so okay, that
Yeah,
must
very
be
much
so
so.
many miles from here. So you do get, and the backwoods with the paths that sort of link the town and stuff to his back of his home, and his home being really stuck in and sort of wedged in these trees, and he
Yeah.
really fleshes out the town quite well without really overtly showing the entire town. He
You
really
do
just shows you
feel
glimpses.
a knowledge of where you are at each point. So when you're in the woods, you know how far from his house, how far from the main road you are, and all this sort of thing. You really feel that, don't you? Yeah, I have to say. I'm a bit. I didn't. I'm not going to dwell on the film, but I didn't mind the film. It's okay. It uses a lot of Durf's dialogue and a lot of his set pieces in it. And as an adaptation comic, they're never as good as the comics, as far as I'm concerned. But it has a try, put it that way. But I recently got to sit in a meeting in regards to a book about what we were going to decide. We had a couple of offers around a book, and we were deciding whether to go with the animation or to go with the live action. And obviously, in the most cases, live action makes more money than animation. But the book was suited to an animation style, and I think this book is as well. I'd like to have seen Durf's work animated in it. I think that would work really well.
When I this is one of the ones that when I heard there was a film being done of it, I instantaneously went, oh no. Oh, just I did from what I saw of the film, it was okay. It got the sort of quiet aspect of it, over really well. But there was just bits that, like, his dad was just overplayed. And like I say, you only see two panels of him in this.
Yeah.
And he's gone. So to see him loads at the start of the film, I was like, that just doesn't ring true at all. I mean, he even says, you know, nobody ever really saw his dad all that much, or saw his little brother, and yet you see his little brother and his dad loads in the film,
well,
and you barely really
saying,
see.
Durf makes a point of saying, look, it's not about the kid. You know, he doesn't want to talk about the kid. It's not his fault. You know, the younger brother. You know, that's interesting. Yeah. From a journalistic point of view, almost, that's an interesting point of view to take. That you don't need to draw these people into it. His brother's a serial killer. I'm sure he gets enough fucking shit as it is having that surname. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
I have to say, artistically, for me, the scene in the mall has an absolute quality movement and awkwardness at the same time. And it's so well imagined. And there's he does all kinds of things. So the people who haven't read it, he basically goes and knocks people's glasses over. He walks. There's no shame in him. There's no fear in him. He just goes and does it. And there's one of these restaurants that's sort of the diners. There's an open space onto the concourse in the mall. And he goes over and he's knocking over their glasses and shouting at them. And then he goes over to, he starts shouting random names out. He goes over to a woman who's giving out, try this bit of nature's food, I think it's called, and he spits it out on the floor, but he chews it for like three panels and then spits it out and starts shouting out that he's allergic, and he goes full on, he just goes for it. And then the last panel of that is he's standing still with that back to that stony faced, you know, you could wave your hand in front of his face and he wouldn't notice look, and he's in the middle
with his shoulders forward as well.
Because he famously walked with his hands down by his sides, didn't he? He didn't really stride anywhere. He sort of ambled. And on either side of these boys, and they're kind of ignoring him. One's looking at his watch, and you just feel the awkwardness. You think, oh, what is happening? And those few pages, I have to say, I'd love one of those pages on a wall or something. Just beautiful.
That one when he first starts to freak out at the very, very start, the big massive bah when he's standing with his legs sort of crossed in, and
so good.
It's just that's amazing. And he's even got like the roof detail and stuff going around the outside to show you. It's just brilliant. It is really good. You're right.
I love that sequence. I think because he does set pieces well. There's a few like the one we talked about at the start, and some of the drinking ones, and this one, and the moment in the dance, and he does these sort of set that you could almost pull out and put in an anthology, and they would work.
Yeah,
they're so well organized and slotted in, and part of an overall narrative. And then if the other one I wrote down is, if you go a few pages on from there, I think it's page 145 in my copy, where he's drinking outside of the window while the school teacher is inside saying, where's Dharma, he's never here.
Yeah.
And he's outside.
Yeah, he's right up against the brick wall.
Yeah. And every brick is drawn and the grass is drawn, and he's got his head back drinking from this sort of half bottle of whiskey. And with his with his brick, he was a briefcase wanker, wasn't he? Absolutely incredible. Yeah, really, really amazing.
As Derf says, nobody suspected the kid with the briefcase.
Yeah,
to have booze sitting in it.
Okay, man. So, let's pause for one of the sponsors just for a second, and we'll give it our marks out of 10. So the list lockdown has got us all down in the dumps, hasn't it? It's got us separated from the rest of our communities in a way that social media tries but can't make up for. But you can make the connection for just £249.95 with a Gizstein telescope and tripod. With a super zoom facility, you can watch Brian at number 46 having a Tommy Tank in his summer house, or Brenda from the newsagents French kissing her pug on the early morning walk because of her deep feelings of extreme isolation and loneliness. £249.95 from Waitrose, Londis and Gosh Comics. I guess that one. Sorry, mate. Yep. Okay.
It's only £249.
It's not bad, is it?
Wow.
Super zoom. Super zoom.
Yeah. I might have to ditch the binoculars I've got for that. Definitely.
You're a back garden dweller. I know you are. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So, who would you recommend this to? You recommend it to me very wisely. I absolutely loved it. Absolutely.
Yep.
It's ages. I mean, you could probably a 15, 16 year old would eat this up. They'd probably find it quite outrageous and, oh, I know all about Dharma. You know, there's that sort of thing. And there's nothing in there that's stuff that they shouldn't know about, I suppose.
Well, I would. I recommended it to a guy that was. You know how you get that one person that's always into, like, really into sort of true crime and following the sort of serial killers and all. You know, who's the most gruesome serial killer? I actually suggested it to him, and fuck me, it about turned him. So,
okay. I've suggested, aren't we?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I've suggested it to a lot of people. I've kind of it's one of those ones that I think me and Dave and Mike actually spoke about it before. It's one of those ones that I suggest to people who don't necessarily read comics.
Because
of the kind of subject matter behind it as well, it can really hook somebody in, regardless if they're into comics or not. And it is a sort of a daunting thing to look at because it does look really thick. But as you say, you could just batter through it.
Yeah.
You usually don't.
There's an awful lot of back matter, isn't there? There's an awful lot of there's an annotation section. You get a lot of sketches. You get a lot of reference stuff. You get the little two short stories that are about what happens later, years onwards, about what they say about him and then how he discovers it. Which I won't ruin. I think perhaps people can get that little bit of a thrill of reading the story and then discovering those two if they go for it, which I think they should do with this. But yeah, it's definitely a one that you could. It's one of those ones that isn't capes. It isn't too extreme art that people go, oh, I don't like that. You know, some art it takes us a while to become acquainted, you know, to fall in love with, doesn't it? And this isn't that.
Yeah,
this
it does.
Immediately understandable, but stylized. You know,
it's definitely super accessible. 100%. I know it's a very striking style, but I don't think it's enough to put somebody off straight away when they look at it.
Yeah, totally. So out of 10, what are you going to give it? In the library of Stuart, in your West Wing, in your palatial mansion, you've got a lot of comics. what on a 1 to 10, what are you going to give it out of 10?
Do you know what, mate? It's genuinely one of my absolute favourites. So it really does take a 10 out of 10 for me.
Cool.
It really does, and I don't say that lightly because it does sit in our main bookshelf, you know, for anybody coming into the house to come and have a look at. So it's definitely a 10 out of 10 for me, and it is basically the first thing I will go to if somebody says, "Oh, I'm looking to read something new," or "Oh, I'm looking to read comics," and it's usually the first thing that I will grab. So it's a 10 out of 10 for me.
That's good. Yeah, and I know you've talked to me about we were over dinner once. We were talking about who our favourite ever guest would be on the podcast, and you mentioned him, didn't you?
Big time.
Have you ever reached out to? I'm sure I wouldn't mind. He seems a talkative guy, you know.
I haven't actually, and it's actually only been sort of recently that I've thought about it, to be honest, because I think it's the kind of person that I think I would love to have Dave sitting with me as well, because he's such a big fan as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he has a sort of a different perspective and a different line of questioning that he would be able to pull out for it as well. That I'd love to hear what he'd have to say to Dave as well. But I think it's definitely somebody that I will be approaching in the future, 100%, because I'd love to get a chance just to sit and chat to him.
Yeah,
I mean, the guy's recently very kindly bought me his Joey Ramone original.
Really?
As a present.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I've got that framed sitting at the top of the stairs. And you're right, when you said earlier on, he just very confidently puts it down in pen. There is not a single mark of pencil on that paper at all.
I love watching guys who can do that. I love watching them. Perhaps the ones with the more sort of cartoony style are often the ones who do that more because they don't have to get it exactly right, do they? You know, but the I love watching. I watched Brendan McCarthy do that once at a Bristol convention, and it was just, I still remember it to this day. He just went straight in and drew the outline of his head, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, how did you do that? And I think the other thing as well with these sort of guys, my big heroes. I'm desperate to interview them, but I would just love to interview them face to face. It's a whole different game with it. Oh, just another podcast to go on when they've got a new book coming out. But if you actually get to sit down with them in a restaurant or where it's going to be, you know, and interview them face to face, I just prefer that. I just love that experience.
Yeah, totally.
Plus,
yeah.
I've interviewed some people whose work I've really liked on podcasts and stuff, and then I've met them in conventions. You sort of hesitantly have to remind them who you are. And then they sort of try and remember and can't quite for the first 5 minutes. And then you say something like, oh, I'm the bloke who kept shouting boobs, I'm the English bloke. And then they remember. And it's just this sort of, you almost have to introduce yourself again to them, you know, sort of. It's the cyber world, I suppose, isn't it? He's very influenced by music. I know, did you just put together a YouTube playlist, by the way? I saw on your tweets.
Yeah, I did. I hadn't ever got around to reading punk rock and Trailer Parks. I'd read a lot of these City Strips online. I'd read Trashed, obviously. I'd found online there was like a website that had the pages from the first My Friend Is Dharma, My Friend Dharma, sorry, and the first Trashed as well, the sort of first wee zine sort of version ones. And I'd read all them, but I'd never read Punk Rock and Trailer Parks. And to be honest, it's kind of, that's his sort of, his most, I don't know what's the word I'm kind of looking for, his most sort of connected piece, because he's so into his punk rock.
Right.
And it's very much reminiscent of where he grew up and stuff. And I know My Friend Dharma is as well, but it's, you know, this rings true of Derf. So I started reading it. But the opening page, the introduction, has a 43 song playlist to go along with reading the comic to give you the feel.
Okay, I wonder where you got that from. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I went looking for it and I couldn't find a together one at all. There was people who had put ones together on YouTube, but they were like 10 songs shy, or they'd had like a couple of songs deleted or whatever, and I just went on and went, oh, fuck this, and put all 43 songs on. Found them all. They were dead easy to find. But yeah, put it all together and put it on as a playlist for public consumption. So
it's
I'm hoping...
Devo and Elvis Costello and The Jam and The Clash.
Yeah, The Clash and Ramones and everything, yeah.
Richard Hell, this sort of thing. The Slits.
Yeah. It's all stuff that I was listening to growing up as well.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of... I know a lot of the playlist anyway. Okay, there's a couple of things in between. Rachel Sweet, and I wasn't listening to the Dead Boys, but that's just purely because that's very reminiscent of that American town, whereas it was only a certain amount of American punk that made it over here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's very reminiscent of a time that I kind of had in my life as well. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting properly cracked in. I'm in the first sort of 30 pages just now, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it, when you connect to something like that? Yeah. I always think of it. Probably the nearest person I'd compare him to is probably Bob Fingerman's work. I'm a friend of his as well.
Yeah.
But I'm a massive fan. I was a massive fan, that's why I'm a friend of his. But and he's very into that. He's very into music. And if you follow him on Facebook at the moment, he's putting out his 10 albums type thing. Yeah, it's so good, isn't it, man? It's, comics are great, aren't they? How good are they?
Yeah.
They don't get better than that. Yeah. Oh, good stuff. Now, speaking of comics, so we'll go over to you for a couple of minutes, if you don't mind. So
you've got
a number of strings to your bow. I was just wanted to ask you, because I know we had you on the Awesome Pod the other day for the 250th. Thank you very much for coming on. It was a bit raucous. It got a bit raucous, that one. I haven't listened back to it, but I do remember it getting quite raucous. It was Hopper. So you're editing a book for Fairspark. It's a series of, I suppose you're doing it in a kind of the tradition of the French album. They're not numbered, they're just different mysteries. Did you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Editing with the absolutely amazing Rob Barnes writing and illustrating and creating this beautiful comic, very anthropomorphic, kind of, you know his style, it's very sort of Asterix-y
it's gorgeous
looking.
I watch him get better and better, and he was never a slouch, but I watch him getting better and better with each book, and I think this is his best so far, genuinely.
There's a very confident line in this. He's very, I've said it to Rob, as much as I love Gallant and Amos, he's very connected to this. I think he's had this character very much building up inside of him, and this is just kind of splashing out on the pages now. But yeah, Hopper, Detective of the Strange, it's just this anthropomorphic rabbit detective, sorry, private detective solving these crimes in conjunction with the police as well. So he's not kind of these
Is
lone
it
wolf sort of
Sergeant
things.
Bull
He
or
hasn't.
someone like that? Is it Bull? I can't
Yeah,
remember. Yeah,
yeah.
I like him.
Who's who's actually shown up in number two, which is coming soon, but number one is out just now. And do you know what? It's he's got Rob's got that aspect that he's slowly but surely building up a sort of roster of characters around Hopper as well. And getting these sort of friends joining him along the way and having this sort of Hopper detective gang, which is really cool.
And there's
It's
the
it
cabbies
is
is there's a little bit of a nod to the Shadow, isn't there? Because he's got an assistant who's a yellow taxi driver,
Yeah,
a girl,
Gladys.
Gladys. Yeah,
Yeah.
there's a romantic, but Rob does this well because you know that she quite likes him, you know. But
Yeah.
there's nothing overly stated, is there? You know, and she's a sort of in the best possible way sort of spunky sidekick who gets herself in trouble and, you know.
Yeah, she's not a woman to be messed with, definitely. She packs a hell of a punch as well. She's he's just I came onto this not knowing about Hopper at all, and coming onto it when it was just called Detective of the Strange, and working with Rob and working quite closely with him, like back and forward. We do email back and forward like a lot.
Oh, that's good.
When we're working on our comic, I don't just, you know, it's not just a case of me handing him his notes and then him giving me something back with no feedback. He gives me feedback along with what I'm saying to him, and I
Oh,
ask
good
him
stuff.
about certain aspects as well. I don't just say change this. I say, do you think we could maybe do a change in this bit? Because there's bit, don't get me wrong, there's bits on it that I think will play out really well, but it's maybe just. It maybe just needs a tweak, you know.
Yeah, of
It
course.
just maybe needs a
That's the
little
point.
something
That's the
extra.
point of an editor. You can often tell books that haven't had
Yeah.
that hand in them. Yeah, I think that's if you're a
Yeah,
good
yeah.
editor, it's just a smooth ride, you know, when you're reading it.
But I do, but I really love working with Rob for this, but mainly because his mind seems to be very sort of character driven, and he's another, do you know, he's another one that can really flesh out the whole town. And not have to show you it bluntly. He can just show you little aspects. And, you know, he gets a cab ride to this place from his office. So that's maybe 20, 30 minutes away or whatever. It's really good.
For those that haven't read it,
Yeah.
it's a bit like I think you might be a bit too young to remember Kolchak the Night Stalker, which was a sort of 70s detective. He appeared in the X-Files at one point. I think the
All
guy
right.
who liked the X-Files dragged him back for a Davin McGa is it Darren McGavin? I think was the actor's name. And every week he'd be up against a vampire, or he'd be up against a yeti, or you know, it's all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it was never sort of super supernatural. It was always urban detective plus supernatural. And that's kind of, there's a little bit of the touch of that this one as well, I think.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, basically. I kind of equated it to a sort of Monster of the Week slash Asterix meets Maltese Falcon or something like that, you
Yeah,
know.
it's almost
It's
like I'd say Usagi Yojimbo meets the Maltese Falcon. It's like that, or
Yeah.
the Long Sleep, or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Usagi, and I love a rabbit. I love a rabbit.
Yeah.
He emotes him so well, you know. There's a real personality to everyone in this, which I think Rob does so well, as well.
Yeah,
There
he
really
really
is.
does. He does really big sort of gaping eyes, or like his ears stand on end, even though he's wearing a hat and all this kind of stuff. They stick out the top of his hat, and it's just, oh, it's brilliant.
Cool.
I'm really glad to have got a chance to work with Rob on this specifically, and that's not just hyperbole, that is genuinely I love doing
Yeah, you got
this.
a lovely little assignment there with him, haven't you? Because I mean,
Yeah.
we're not earning off this. We're doing it for the love of it because it's a charity, and
Yeah,
people
exactly.
should go and invest in it. And I love the fact that we both got on, because I'm editing the Spark and you're editing that, and it's really great fun. Yeah, really
Yeah, it
good
is.
stuff.
It really
Aaron
is.
knows what he's doing. Speaking of which, on Saturday is SparkCon. The details will be coming to you. If you go to our Facebook, the Awesome Comics Pod Facebook group, you'll be able to see the details, but I'll make sure they're posted elsewhere. And it will be live streaming the Awesome Pod from 3 p.m. on SparkCon. I know there's a lot of other creators involved. It's just one of those sort of conventions from home deals, so have a look out for that. If you can, go over to the Little Heroes website, or go to Fairspot Books, and you can donate or buy some books. But there's some great books for sale on there. Go over there and buy some, even one by me. So head over there and give Aaron some money, because he works very hard, Aaron. He's a good egg. He's one of those sort of silent heroes that we don't see too much about. And he's we've had a few challenges in that job recently, let's face it. Just with the time of year and a couple of characters we had to deal with, but it's going smoothly, and he keeps a good happy ship. So go over and do that. So how is it going on the so you're trying to work the live stream out for the That Comic Smell, is that right? Or
Well, trying to work out little bits here and there. We were trying a live stream website, but I've got the aspect as well. I want to record it so that we've still got it
yeah,
at
I
the
think
end of
that's
the
always
day. So
better.
was, yeah. But I'm having a hell of a time trying to record it and live stream it at the same time. I'm doing sort of tests at the minute with well, I'm due to do a couple of tests with Nando, where the two of us will just sit and chat, and I'll sort of fiddle about with all the settings and stuff. But I'm not a massively techie guy. I mean,
Yeah, you and me both.
before we came on and chatted, I was trying to sort out the episode for tomorrow, and it was coming up with error messages, and I'm going, "Oh, fuck off," you know, I don't have a clue what this means, and I'm just copying and pasting things and other things and hoping for the best. So I think it'll be out tomorrow. I think it'll be all right, but we'll
Oh,
wait
good
and see.
stuff. I'll be downloading that on my dog
No,
walk. Yep.
yeah. No, we managed to get together, and we managed to do a stream and get a podcast episode out of it. But the next step is definitely trying to get a live stream session. I know everybody's kind of jumping on that bandwagon and doing something, but it's been sort of overdue. We were on about doing a live show either this year or next,
Okay.
for a wee while, and then for all this to then come up, it was like, well, we can do a
Now's the
live
time.
stream. It's the
Yeah.
next best thing, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Because I was talking
yeah.
about, I downloaded all the programs and stuff to do something for Nobrow that we haven't really got around to yet. And I thought,
Right.
oh, I've got the lockdown. Oh, I might as well just try it, just give it a go.
Yeah.
And it's been fun. But yeah, no, I mean, thanks to everyone who's listened. And I'm sure you're the same. I'm always very grateful of people who actually take the time in their day to listen to me fucking rabbit on. Yeah.
Oh,
But that's.
this has been really good.
It has, mate. I've
I've
really enjoyed
really
that chat, and I'm really glad you opened my eyes to that one. You know, sometimes you just think, I can't open another drawer of money and get and buy everything that this creator has done. You know,
Yeah.
sometimes, yeah, it's sometimes like that, and I think, oh, if I go down the DERF line, I'm going to be spending another like 100, 200 quid on his books. And then you said, oh, and I went, nah, I should have been buying these years ago. Do you know what I mean? I should be on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's open that
Yeah,
door. Yeah.
he's got a new one coming as well,
Has
actually.
he? Right, good.
Yeah, he's got a new one coming about the Kent State shootings.
Oh wow,
I think it's
okay.
actually just called Kent State.
Yes, I've heard of this. I didn't know that much about it. Yeah, oh, interesting. Oh,
Yeah,
good.
I think it's meant. I can't remember when it's meant to come out. I think it's meant to come out at the start of May, but we'll wait and see what happens there, because
Yeah.
obviously everything's a bit kind of up in the air in that respect. Fair enough, he'll be going through a sort of going through a publisher and being sort of
Yeah, and it's
independent
never
stuff.
quick.
But
Yeah.
yeah, it's never quick, no.
It's put me in the mood to read some Peter Bagg. I'm looking at a Peter Bagg book on my shelf. I need to go and pick it up and read it
Nice.
as well. They're similar
Very
sort
good.
of vein, aren't they? Yeah, Peter Bagg's a
Yeah,
bit more obsessed with wanking, but yeah, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Good. So, thank you, mate. That was extremely enjoyable. I'm going to do now back to my script. Well, there you have it. Hopefully, you got something out of it. You can find me normally over at neverironanything.blogspot.com. Buy my comics at neverironanything.bigcartel.com or follow me on Twitter at Ezo, yes, EZOHYZ. You can plan, please pop over and listen to a proper podcast. You're going to get two of these coming up. Awesomecomics.podbean.com or a podcast catcher of your choice. Where can they find you and your good podcasts, Mr. Stewart?
They can find me on Twitter at Uramyx, Uramyx. You can also find me across at That Comic Smell on Instagram and Twitter, and we are also on SoundCloud, iTunes, oh sorry, Apple podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, at That Comic Smell, you know, all the regular places you can get podcasts. I'm also a contributor with my review section called Small Pressed on the Lakes Comic Art Festival podcast. And much like Tony, I'm across editing some books at Fierce Park Books.
Nice one. Yeah, I love the lakes as well. Good people.
Yeah.
Yeah, good people.
Yeah. Great
Yeah,
guys.
yeah.
Great guys.
Nice one. Thanks for coming on, Tom Stewart.
Thank you, Tony Esmond.
And the rest is history.